Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Triangle Sports Talk podcast. I'm James Biernot alongside Polly Lascalzo, and we're very excited to be bringing you our first episode of the show. This is going to represent Drexel University Athletics, as well as our presence, our sports presence here at the Triangle, which is Drexel University Student Newspaper. So, Polly, you want to introduce yourself to start us off?
Yeah, so I'm Paulo Lascalzo. I am currently the co-chief sports editor of the Triangle, Drexel Student Newspaper. So I've been here for about 3 years covering all of Drexel's athletic news. Currently, I'm also the beat reporter for Drexel Athletics at the Philadelphia Inquirer. I've been around Drexel Athletics for a while covering it, and excited to be bringing it to you guys in podcast form now.
Definitely, yeah. So I also am a member of the Triangle. I'm going to be our next co-sports editor, as Polly's going to be taking over editor-in-chief at the paper. I'm very excited for that. And I'm also a color analyst and on-air talent for Drexel Athletics from time to time. But we want to start it off talking a little bit about what we're going to be doing with this show, which I think more than anything is trying to bring more light on Drexel Athletics, because although students might know about our basketball team, when you go beyond the student base and maybe some people in Philadelphia, Drexel Sports doesn't have the household name that Penn or Temple might have. Maybe not even household, but we're not there compared to some of the other Philly schools and then other just colleges with solid athletics programs like us, especially with how many sports we have solid and sometimes like top of the nation or towards the top of the nation teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for those of us like me and you who follow Drexel Athletics with a finer eye than most people, we have a pretty deep appreciation and respect for the programs that we have here. I think there may be a little bit of a common misconception among the Drexel community that maybe our athletics aren't so top tier. And don't get us wrong, we're a mid-major school. But when you are comparing us to the other Philadelphia area athletic programs, we're right in the mix with all of them. And I think when you compare us to our most prominent sport, which is basketball, I think, you know, again, we are a very mid-major program who is, you know, competitive with a school like Temple and Penn and LaSalle, but obviously we're not Villanova or Penn State or anything like that. But hey, when you're talking about our lacrosse programs, our rowing program, our squash program, you're talking about our field hockey program for that matter. You're talking about top 25 in the nation programs that are consistently competing for not only CAA championships, but are being ranked on a national scale and some of the best teams in the nation at those sports. So we want to highlight all of the sports here at Drexel and kind of bring to light all of the good things and all the newsworthy things that are happening across Drexel Athletics as a program.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people would know that Drexel is a top 15 nationally ranked lacrosse program. I don't think people would know we have an All-American worthy women's lacrosse goalie. So things like that are definitely things we're going to want to do with this show. I think speak to some athletes is always great to hear their views on what's going on and speaking to coaches, alumni, things of the sort. So that's definitely what we want to do with the show. But when it's wintertime on campus, nothing bigger than basketball. And it was just homecoming weekend this past weekend. Wins in all three games at the DAC, Friday and Sunday for the women's team and Saturday for the men's team. If we're kicking it off with the men's team, Pauly, the Delaware game was a big one. It was a great win, and it was a much-needed one and almost kind of like a sigh of relief for the Dragons.
This win could not have come at a better time for the Drexel men's basketball program. All year long, I think the men's basketball team has struggled to get the momentum, as this is a very new-look team. A lot of new faces, a lot of faces and new roles that they've never done before. So I think this game against Delaware, our biggest rival in the sport, in the final matchup between Drexel and Delaware in a homecoming game in the CAA, in front of a sold-out DAC, it was just a huge momentum-building win for the Dragons. And I think that not only was it good to get that win, but you feel good about that win in retrospect.
Yeah, I think so. And it was, you know, you knew they were going to win the game pretty much from the first few minutes. The energy was there. That was one of the best energies I've ever seen at the DAC, the crowd energy that they had. And Kobe McGee was firing. And usually when Kobe McGee's firing at home, it's a good sign. And he was shooting the three ball really well again, which is good. We're a better team when the three ball is being shot well. But overall, it was a different look lineup for the Dragons. It was the first time we didn't see the usual starting five because of Yame Butler's suspension. We saw Shane Blakeney in the starting lineup. I know you and I both weren't thrilled to see that. But talk to me a little bit about the guard play to start, because we saw Yame in the second half. He looked good. Kobe throughout the whole game. We saw Deuce. We saw Ed Shane. We saw Vanderhorst. Everybody was out there. What did you like? What did you not like?
Yeah, so of course, mentioning that Yame Butler was suspended for the first half of this game due to a violation of the CIA's sportsmanship policy in the game against Northeastern before. So there was going to be a lot of pressure on Kobe McGee early on in the game because he is our go-to scorer for the Drexel men's basketball team. And him and Yame have kind of been running mates this entire season. And without Yame, you really were a little worried that who is going to step up and fill that void. And as you mentioned, Shane Blakeney enters the starting lineup, but he did not replicate Yame's production. That's not something he's shown he can do on a consistent level at this level. But Kobe was able to kind of fill that void that Yame left and then some. Yeah. So he really got off to a great start, scored the first 5 points of the game, 9 first half points without Yame. And the guard play all around was pretty solid. You got Kobe playing well, Kevon Vanderhorst coming in off the bench, bringing a lot of scoring pop to begin that game and kind of showing that he can be a dynamic one-on-one skilled player like Yame Butler in the moments when some of the offensive burden needs to be spread out more besides just with Kobe and Yame.
Yeah, I agree with you totally. I would have liked to have seen Kevon start. I think we both would have wanted that. But, you know, Shane has his moments. Shane has his efforts where it's like, this is Shane Blakeney. This is what we saw last year as a redshirt freshman. These are the things that got us really excited. But there still hasn't been like a complete game from Shane really this entire year. He had a good game at Fairfield, but even when he's contributing, getting more minutes, they needed him to step up a little bit more. 2 for 10 from the field, not a good number there. 0 for 2 from three. He's lost his ability really to shoot the three ball, but he's still out there and taking shots. He played 35 minutes. He's still getting the high volume. So I think not that it held them back. Obviously against Delaware, they were able to get past it. But I think as Spiker continues to look at how his lineup maybe looks now that you had a game where you had to work a half without one of your key contributors, I think now is maybe a perfect chance for him to shake up the rotation and shake up who's getting what minutes, who's coming in what situations. Because we're now just about halfway through the CAA and they're a 500 team.
Yeah, and listen, we know that Zach Spiker loves his guys. He is as loyal of a coach as there is in college basketball. And when players are loyal to him, he wants to do right by them. And that's an admirable thing. And Shane Blakeney has stayed with this program for 3 years when a lot of other guys maybe would have tested the transfer portal. Shane has stayed true to him, same as Kobe and Yame and Cole Hargrove. All those guys have stayed true to this program. So Coach Spiker is going to be loyal to them back. Talking to Coach Spiker in the post game, he was glowing about Blakeney's performance, mainly on the defensive end. And I think we would probably both agree that Shane is a tremendous one-on-one defender, and he brings a lot of value on the defensive end night in and night out. But is that really, you know, worthy of 35 minutes of time on the floor? And also, does that mean he needs to be taking 10 shots? Yeah. Probably not. So I think that there could be a change in strategy of usage, certainly. Yeah. And again, like we said, you know, re-examining this rotation, that Kevon Vanderhorst did not start off this season healthy. So he is a more recent addition to this lineup, but hey, in every game he's played in, he's produced.
Yeah.
And he's shown that he can be, a very effective player in, a probably expanded role that he has, I think, earned at this point.
And I mean, you just said it best, because they started this year in such an unsure place. And Spiker said that in the press conference after the first game. We talked, I think it was a question you asked him about, like, how do you deal with so many question marks at multiple positions? And he honestly said, like, we had question marks 1 to 5. How many returning, the 5 returning players and 2 guys who had really contributed in Kobe and Yame, that's got to be tough. So now you know what you have a little bit, though. You know Kevon might be our best guy to be starting at point guard. That might be the case. Maybe we'll see it. Maybe we won't. He's the guy that brought the pace, and I think it was super evident against Delaware that being able to pick up the pace and, like, match a team like that, a really fast-moving, sometimes guard-heavy team that's got a lot of variety in what they can do, I think that was a good look. And so I'm excited to see. Now's the time to shake up. I want Spiker to do it. I'd be really disappointed if he didn't, and we keep seeing the same game plan. But I liked what I saw against Delaware. I think having he was forced to mix things up, and I think it worked well.
Yeah, and hey, I think that I agree with you a lot, and I think Coach Spiker agrees with you that the way they looked against Delaware was a much more sustainable way of winning games. Yeah. Because in the preseason, Coach Spiker talked about, hey, I want to run and gun. I want to shoot some threes, play fast. Early on in the season, that turned out to not really be a sustainable way of the Dragons playing. They didn't really have the personnel to do it. The people who maybe in practice were making their threes turned out to not really be reliable at making their threes in the games. Talking about a guy like Shane Blakeney, a guy like William Garcia Adston, Victor Panoff, Cole Hargrove, all guys who theoretically can make the three ball, but so far through a pretty large sample size have not shown an ability to do that. But in this game, the Dragons had to pick up the pace a little bit, because you're playing against a team like Delaware, who is one of the top 50 fastest teams in tempo in the nation. And so that forced us to pick up the speed, and that benefited the Dragons at the end of it.
And what it's so, like, it's mind-boggling a little bit, because we've worked well with a fast-paced offense at times this year, and some of the best stretches in that Delaware game was when Kevon was leading a really quick offense, because he's a fast guy. You have Kobe to dish it out to. You have Yame there. You can build a lineup that works at a faster pace. It's just about the guys you use to do that, and then when they're not out there, how you use the other guys to then mix with the pace and mess up your other team. Because we do have players like a Ville or like a Ralph who could contribute. They're not contributing on pace whatsoever. Those guys are brick walls, but they've got a lot that they could bring in, and you want to get those guys minutes. It's just how you go about doing it and where you mix them in.
And my mind jumps to, there was about a 10-minute portion at the end of the first half where it was Kevon Vanderhorst, Kobe McGee, I think William Garcia Adston, Clem Edemanyan were all in, and they were just running. And it was a lot more effective at not letting the offense stall out, as we've seen happen so many times, where Dustrake brings the ball up or Shane Blakeney brings the ball up at a slow pace, and you're just running, passing the ball around the perimeter, looking for anything, and no one can get open. But when you have a Kevon Vanderhorst bring the ball up with some pace, attacking the rim, making the defense adjust to us, as opposed to, you know, having some slow developing thing that lets you get to 5 seconds left in the shot clock and suddenly someone has to force a bad shot. Yeah. Well, now Kevon Vanderhorst or Kobe McGee attacks the rim, and you either can finish in the paint or you can dish it out to someone who's wide open from three, which is a much more sustainable way of developing an offense than taking 28 seconds to hopefully get a shot that you might like.
Yeah, and a lot of the time it would be a 28 second and then it's somebody shooting a three anyway. Mm-hmm. And so if you're working in and you're trying to attack earlier in the possession, which is something I've seen more from them, especially in that Delaware game, like really trying to see what you've got early on, and then maybe you dish it out and try to go for somebody who's a little deeper. But having that attempt and having the players who can make that kind of effort, I think that's key for them. So let's talk about the road ahead for the Dragons, because that was a big win over Delaware coming off a tough loss against Northeastern. Where are they right now and how do they go from here? They're headed on the road to Monmouth. then headed on the road to Towson. Those are Thursday and Saturday's games. So how are you feeling headed into those games, and where does the momentum lie maybe?
I think you got all the momentum that you could ask for heading into those two games. And listen, if you are serious about being a contending team in the CAA playoffs, these are two games that you at least need to play very close. And you need to probably beat Monmouth on the road. Yeah. And then you need to at least make it a very tight game against Towson, if not win. Because they are in a position where they're 500 in CAA play, right in the middle of the conference.
Yeah.
And you got to, at some point, make a move and beat some teams that are quality opponents and say, hey, we deserve to be in the top five of this conference and really contend for even a bye in the playoffs.
Yeah. And I mean, last year, you remember, we were that team that got off to such a hot start, got the bye kind of because of our hot start, because we did slow down in the middle of CAA play. We won some games at the end to maintain that 2 seed in the conference, but we would not have been there without, I think it was like a 6-1 start or something like
7-0.
That.
7-0. At this point, yeah, at the homecoming game, we were undefeated. So
It was. Okay, so I had my number wrong, but ridiculous, right? And we don't have that cushion this year, so we can't be playing like a team that's found its like true identity, because I don't think we have. And if Spiker thinks we have found that identity, I don't think we're going anywhere in the CAA. So let's talk about Monmouth. Abdi Bashir is their top guy. Big time scorer, averaging 21 points per game. Nobody else averages more than 11. So it is really one guy that's really dominating this offense. They have some contributors that come. They're a deeper team maybe than we are. But I think if we can guard him well, I think it should be a better game. He's usually, when he's having his best games, Monmouth is able to have their most success.
Yeah, and you've got the personnel to do it. You talk about the Delaware game, how good of a job Shane Blakeney did on John Camden.
Yep.
Hey, now Shane Blakeney, you got another tough test coming against Monmouth, but he's shown that he can do it. So I think that you do match up well to be able to slow down Bashir.
Yeah.
But again, this is a team that Drexel needs to beat.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're a team that so far, 3-5 in CAA, not looking great. They had an abysmal start to their non-conference schedule. They were 0-9 or 1-9 to start it off. But Bashir's 6'7". He's a tough guy to defend. But that's something where, like you mentioned, Shane Blakeney can thrive in that role. He's a little bit bigger. He's a little lankier. He can sometimes move around and really stretch himself out to defend those guys. But William Garcia Adston, too. Although Abdi Bashir is definitely a faster-paced player, Bill's another guy that can really guard a guard or a forward or even a guy that can mix the position kind of well. So I think we match up well against them. I think it's a game you have to win, even on the road. And I think you want to then have that momentum again, even more going to Towson for Saturday.
Yeah, and Drexel's been a good team on the road this year. They've shown very well on the road. We wish they would have more success at home sometimes, but on the road, they've been taking care of business more often than not. Again, Shane and Ville, if we are high on anything about those two guys, it is their ability to guard opponents 1-4, really, in the lineup. So, I think that they can win this game, and they have to win this game.
I think so, And so with that, they'll be then going to Towson on Saturday. Towson, another team that really underperformed in their non-conference schedule, but 6-1 to start CAA play. They've won a lot of games. The only team they've lost to is Charleston. They beat UNCW. They're right behind William and Mary for the best record in the conference. That's going to be a tough game on their turf. But what are you feeling about this Towson game? We've already seen them once this year. We had the edge and should have won that game. So how do we do things differently?
I think you just got to take care of business and control what you can control. The reason that we lost that game against Towson at home is because we could not hit a free throw. I think we shot just over 50% from the free throw line.
Yeah.
That was a game that we were up by 6 points with a minute left, and we lost that game more than Towson won it, to be very honest. And I believe Towson had over 60 points coming off the bench. With a guy like Tark really doing some damage against Drexel. And listen, Zach Spiker and Pat Scarry, the coach of Towson, have a history. They're very good friends. And I think this is a game that Spiker's going to want to win. Yeah. I think Spiker hated losing that game. He told me he was heartbroken that he lost that game.
Yeah.
So you got to return the favor. They beat us at home in a pretty heartbreaking loss.
Yeah.
Go return the favor.
Absolutely. Yeah, an OT loss and a high-scoring loss too. So we'll have to see if that'll be the case. Dragons have not been a high-scoring team this year. But I'm definitely interested to see. You mentioned the free throw shooting, 15 for 27 in that game, 12 missed free throws, really, really not good, 8 for 15 from the line for Yame. But they were a team that had four different guys over 13 points in that last time we played Towson. They have guys who can adapt and play up in the bigger moments. So if we are going to come into Towson and play really aggressively, they're going to match that always. It's a tough rivalry. And it's a tough rivalry, not just between the coaches, but the teams as well, the players, a lot riding on the line. So I'm excited for that game as well.
Yeah, and we can't forget that Towson was the preseason favorite to win the conference. They are as good of a team as there is with Charleston and UNCW. And it's not going to be an easy test to beat them on the road.
No.
But this is, again, if you could play them tight at home, if you should have beaten them at home, then you have to at least have some confidence that, like, hey, we can do this again,
yeah,
and we match up well enough that,
yeah,
we can do this. So if you are serious about being a team that thinks you can contend for a CAA championship in this year, then you got to at least show that you belong in this,
yeah,
game.
Absolutely. I agree with you there, Paulie. Well, that's, I think, a good way to kind of wrap up things for men's basketball. Let's take it over to women's basketball now. And the women's team, very successful weekend, beat the top two, I'd say, teams in the conference. Charleston had the best overall record. Elon had the second best record in the conference. Charleston looked like they were the best team by far. They had lost two in a row coming to the DAC, but they were 12-4, averaging 75.3 points per game. Drexel doesn't even average 60. So it really looked like it would be a tough game. I didn't have a ton of faith, but they came out, Amaris Baker, 10 points in the first quarter. They really fought through that one, too, because they had Charleston low on scoring, and then they lost the lead. They were down 10 in the fourth quarter, came back and won it. And then on Sunday, really beat the living days out of Elon, holding them to under 20 points for the first half. They had 6 points in the first quarter, I believe that was. And almost 17 minutes without a field goal at one point. So really just smothered both teams defensively and saw a little bit more of a well-balanced offense in both those games, which they needed.
Yeah, especially that game against Charleston, a team, like you said, that, yeah, looked like they were probably the class of the CAA for a time. You got to feel good about, A, your ability to defend at a very high level against the best offensive team in the CAA. And also, the Dragons have had a bit of a struggle with some balanced scoring. Amaris, yeah, Baker is as good of a player as there is in the CAA, as good of a player as there is on most teams, yeah, in the NCAA. She is an incredible talent, but she can't do it alone. It got to a point in games against North Carolina A&T, Hofstra, where other teams were double-teaming her up, yeah, and down the court because they knew that, hey, she's the offensive driver here and no one else is going to step up. So like you said, against Charleston and Elon, a player like Kara McCormick, yeah, stepping up to really help show, like, you can't just only guard Amaris. You got to, yeah, guard everyone, or else we'll burn you.
Yeah.
And so that is a win that I think you feel really good about moving forward. And that's a game that you can look at and say, that this is why the Drexel women's basketball team can win the CAA championship again.
Definitely.
Because they have the talent and they have the coaching staff, to be honest, that can make the adjustments needed against any team.
Yeah, and they were facing Charlotte Smith, who's the coach of Elon, on a 5-game winning streak. She's a veteran coach. She's one of the better coaches in women's basketball, just like Amy Mallon. And so they have really the core to do it. They have the talent, too. That's really what people forget. They didn't lose a lot this offseason. They were the team that won the tournament last year. You have Chloe Hodges. You have Grace O'Neill returning. And there was a good moment in the game. I think it was the third quarter. Amaris had maybe 2 points, and Kara didn't score at all. But they were still able to really outscore Elon and hold their own in the game against a team that was 5-1 in the conference coming into that. So having a balanced team, definitely employing the depth a little bit more is good. I saw a lot more out of Lane McGurk too that I liked in that game. But they definitely don't have the easiest schedule coming up. It's not too bad. They played back-to-back games against easier teams, but it'll definitely get harder come road game against Elon, at home versus Campbell, things like that. But they face off against Northeastern and Towson this week. How are you feeling about those games?
Against Northeastern, that's a game that you really should win. Yeah. Northeastern is not a very strong women's program right now. They took care of business against them in their previous matchup in a very convincing way.
Yeah.
So, again, you need to beat Northeastern again. And Towson, like, look, if you can play as well as the women have shown that they can play, then they can beat anyone. Yeah. I am not worried about any team in this conference about Drexel's ability to match up with them as long as they get contributions up and down the lineup as they did against Elon and against Charleston.
Yeah, and I think they're kind of like what you're saying, in as good a place as any other team to win that. And I think they found themselves, especially after this weekend, with the momentum in their favor. Now it gets a little bit easier after you just played two of the toughest teams. You get two of the easier teams, and now you can carry that and maybe not have to play like you did in the tournament last year with every single odds against you. You can play with a little bit more confidence. This team maybe has found their identity a little bit earlier than the men's team, but they also have had problems with how does our rotation look? Who is going to be contributing? Who's going to be hurting us out there with their shooting? So it's good that the women's team had a really productive weekend to kind of figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, last year it was Brooke Mullins in the leadership role, kind of in where Maris Baker is right now, she was the entire offense every night. No matter what, she was going to put up 15 shots, and either she was going to go 10 for 15 and we were going to win that game, or she was going to go 2 for 15 and it was going to be ugly.
Yeah.
And that has been Drexel's offense for a lot of this year with Maris Baker, and she might score 30 and we might win, or she might score 15 and that's going to be a tough game for us to win. Yeah. But if you can get the contributions from Lane McGurk, who we've been seeing a little bit more out of these last few games, Kara McCormick, if she can make her threes, that adds a whole new dimension to the offense. Deja Evans, can you be a little bit better on the offensive end? She's been good on defense. She's provided a decent amount on offense, but can you take it to the next level a little bit down low? And Chloe Hodges, too, can you score a little bit more? Can everyone just do a little bit more for the rest of the season? And then if you can, you're a really hard team to beat.
Yeah, they're a very multidimensional team, and I think that serves them well against a lot of CAA competition that definitely has some flaws on a lot of other programs' rosters. But from Paulie and I here, I think that's all we had for this first episode of the Triangle Sports Talk podcast. Paulie, I'm excited for another week of basketball.
Me too. I'm super excited to watch all these games, and I'm super excited to talk with you about it coming up.
All right. Well, sounds good, and we will see you next week with another episode.